This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Draco Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody, and happy Valentine's Day if you're listening to this on Sunday. This is Inside Open Wheel. Charlie Ante will be joining me next week. He's got a couple of things he's got to attend to this week, but nonetheless, it's a good week to be listening in. Nikita Lastashkin joins us here in just a little bit. He completes a four-car combined effort at HMD GRG after running in Indy Pro 2000 last season. Also, Will Holt signed a deal with Rice Race Prep to run the S1600 Championship this season. We'll talk to him about that. And Adam Crane, the Coca-Cola Bottling Company Kokomo Indy Elite Series winner from Barber, joins us. He also talks about Texas. So as always, you can email us at insideopenwheel@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. Also, leave us a voicemail on our Google Voice mail line at 815-714-9260. A lot of news coming out of the world of Open Wheel. The big story we're following right now is Logan Sargeant, America's Next Hope in Formula One, decides that he will be running something other than Formula Two as budgets force a career rethink. We'll see if he runs F3, if he decides to come back to the United States and run the Indy Lights Championship or something like that. But he's told Racer.com that F2 is definitely ruled out for 2021. The problem with F2 is the funding is very high, as we know. I know that they were saying that with the reduced rounds it would come to down to, but if anything, I think it has actually gone up just a little bit, so that's made it really difficult. Be interesting to see where the next American Hope runs. Also, Monday, if you're listening to this before the announcement, there will be a joint announcement between Michael Andretti and Michelle Jourdain to announce a new racing entry, and we'll have the update for you on Facebook and Twitter when that does drop. Very interesting to see this come down throughout the racing world. No word yet on what it is. It could be a 500 entry, could be a full season entry, but my money is on a 500 only entry. Into the world of e-racing, Braden Eaves and Max Esterson both dominate their wins in their TireRack.com e-series wins. It was a doubleheader on last Tuesday with the two drivers. Frankly, the first race I did get to see, that was more of a wreck fest early on, but nonetheless, both drivers making their way through the issues. Max Esterson leads with 98 points, Braden Eaves 80 points, Josh Green 62 points. The next round is Wednesday evening. It's a doubleheader at Iowa Speedway in Newton, Iowa. And the SCCA COTA Hoosier Super Tour of results are in from last weekend at the Circuit of the Americas. Interesting to note that the F5, FF, and Formula V races were all run on Sunday because of an issue in the previous race. So Sunday had a doubleheader with the smaller Formula cars. The bigger Formula cars looks like this. Varun Choksi wins Atlantics in his FRA Ligier, followed by David Burkett in his Pro Formula Mazda and Jose Girardo in a Galmer F1000. In the Formula Enterprise, it's Russell Turner, Darrell Wilson, Dean Opperman, your top three. Formula X, Nico Christodoulou and his Ligier, Nick Persing and his F4 as well, and Sabra Cook and her Formula Mazda. And Continental, it was Eric Pressberry, the only competitor, so he takes the win. Sunday saw the F500 doubleheader. In the first race, Stephen Jondal and the Red Devil and Stephen Rainey were your top two finishers in F500. They didn't even run the second race. So the first and second race in FF and FV look like this. First race winner was Trevor Russell in his Ford 1600, David Livingston in his Spectrum, Greg Peluso in his Van Diemen. Race two, David Livingston wins that race. Bill Kephart second in his Vestal. Third is Greg Peluso. So in his Van Diemen, also in the Formula V, basically a doubleheader sweep between Hunter Phelps Baron in first, Zachary Whitson second is Protoform, and Chris Jenderjohn in his Vortec in third. So they take the podium both races. In the Atlantics, Hans Petter, Charlie Petter in their Swiss win are first and second. Hunter Yaney will finish his third in his Ligier FRA. Also in Formula X, Sabra Cook wins in her Formula Mazda. Bob Wright in his Elan DPL1 in second place. Nick Persing in his Ligier F4 in third place. Eric Pressberry in his Ford Van Diemen winning in Formula Continental. Also of note, the next Hoosier Super Tour event will be at Button Willow next weekend. We will have expert analysis on that race. Other stories making news, some driver announcements up in two this week. Kyle August will be running the number 13 for Rice Race Prep in the Pro 1600 class. Miles Rowe has been announced as a driver in the number 99 Force Indy in USF 2000. Enzo Fittipaldi makes a switch from Europe all the way over to the United States in US in Indy Pro 2000, I should say. Christian Bolger will also do the double this year with Carlin and Jay Howard in Indy Lights. So he'll run both FR Americas and Indy Lights. Going to be interesting to see which championship he chooses in the weekend that they mix up. Nonetheless, coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Nikita Lastashkin sits down with me to talk about his new season with HMD Motorsports.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
If you listened earlier in the year, we talked about this driver moving from Exclusive Autosport to testing with HMD to now racing with HMD Motorsports, and it's Nikita Lastashkin. It's Nikita. We're gonna go with that. I apologize, Nikita. It's
that's so good.
As I said earlier, it's my thick German tongue. But welcome to Inside Open Wheel. I've got to say, you have had an interesting past couple of seasons. I want to talk about that, but I want to go into you coming to the States back, you know, when you're 16 years old. What was the main reason for coming here to the States? Because at that time, you didn't have much, you know, if you were looking to get into racing, there weren't much of an influence in Russian racers at the time.
Oh, no, absolutely. I have no idea the racing world existed until I was in my 20s, actually.
Oh, so, wow.
Me coming here stateside had nothing to do with any kind of racing at all. So I literally just, you know, I grew up in Russia, and I always had sort of a adventurous spirit to myself. And by the time I was done with high school, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And I just wanted to see the world, and I'm grateful that my family let me go on this crazy adventure. I basically moved to the United States at 16. I had no friends, no family, no relatives in the country. I literally just finished high school and decided to give it a go. I moved to Los Angeles. I went to a language school, and then I went to college, and then I went to university. And long story short, here we are.
I was going to say, Russia to Los Angeles, that's got to be a heck of a climate shock, because I'm, you know, sitting here in the Chicagoland area looking outside to whiteout conditions, something that you'd probably be more familiar with.
In the first part of my life, yes, but not so much anymore. I've been living in California for quite some time, but it's pretty much the climate in Russia is similar to Chicago or New York. You know, it's that kind of climate. So, yeah.
2013, you start in the three-day Skip Barber School, went on to race in the championship. What sparked your interest to start off with the Skippy?
So actually, it was believe it or not, super random. I found out about this three-day racing school that they had, and I always loved going fast. You know, growing up, I would I would drive really fast in a snowmobile in the forest or ATV in the summer. And I would really have had an urge to just go as fast as I can. But I had no idea that racing existed, and my family never were into racing at all. But, and then I discovered it kind of by accident. And then when I did the 3-day school, I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. You know, how did I had no clue about go-karting or Formula One. You know, if you would have asked me when I would look at a Skip Barber car and you would have told me that that's Formula One, I'd be like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, totally makes sense. So that's where I started, literally from ground zero, nothing.
And, you know, that's about the best way to do it sometimes. I know you see a lot. I came from the sports car world, so you saw a lot of, you know, famous actors or actresses, you know, just people decided, I'm just going to do Skip Barber one day, and, you know, all of a sudden they're racing, you know, on the Rolex 24. So it's not unheard of to start there instead of starting karting like some of your, you know, some of the guys, your kids you race against.
Yeah, absolutely.
Took third in the championship of the 2014 Summer Series, race in the Pacific Region F1600 Championship Series. And I got to ask, there's the Pacific Region and then you have the FRP 1600. What is the main competition difference between the two? Because I've got to imagine it's a little different.
Yeah, it's quite different. And to be honest, like my whole, at that point, like I said, I had nobody to really put me in any direction in terms of where should I go with racing, because I never had, and I do not have one to this day as far as like a manager or something like that. But literally when I was doing Skip Barber, when I started doing the series, Colton Herta just finished that series. So he moved on to doing 1600 on the West Coast. And I was like, well, you know, it looks like that's a smart move. So that's why I went on and did that. The difference between the competition, obviously the East Coast, the sort of the main region, it's kind of similar to how Formula 4 mm-hmm. is right now in the United States. I would, you know, it kind of took place of what 1600 used to be. So there is a F4 championship on the West Coast, and it's not as competitive as the main series. That's sort of the US F4. So yeah, it's kind of like that.
Yeah, it's interesting because you see, you know, There are West Coast drivers. You talked about Colton Herta, and yet they do start off in those, you know, Pacific 1600, the West Coast F4, and you see the stark difference in how competitive the two are. And it's not knocking the West Coast series; it just is what it is because you see a lot of your big teams. Well, they're east of the Mississippi.
Yeah, and it's something, you know, for whatever reason, there's still competition out there. It's just that, you know, on the West Coast, there would be maybe one or two quick guys, when on the East Coast, there would be 10 or 12 of them. You know, it's just that's how it is. But yeah, I had a good time. You know, it's really affordable at that point in your career in terms of getting the seat time. And at that point, especially for myself, not, you know, going through the go-kart world and all that, that point was perfect because for an affordable, you know, season, I was able to learn so much, and I had a great opportunity to be with a very professional team, PR1 Motorsports. They're actually a very successful team on the sports car side of things. But I did the 1600 with them. So Bobby Orville, he helped me out immensely in that point of my career in terms of just getting a hang of it and being a better driver.
Nikhil Lastishin joins us here on Inside Open Wheel. Also, when you went to the East Coast Series, you teamed with Team Pelfrey, who is another very professional organization out here, and you went up to the USF 2000 Championship with them in 2015, and that started your climb up the road to Indy ladder. It included, obviously, the Winterfest, USF 2000. You went with Cape Motorsports and Wayne Taylor Racing in 2016. Three stops in the Pro Mazda, one with, I still say, is the best racing engine out there, the rotary Mazda that was last season for that, and then the Tatus. Now you're in Indy Lights. Let's talk about that ride. First of all, I know you were connected with Exclusive Autosport, I should say, earlier on in the season, but that fell through. What exactly happened with that?
Well, obviously we were ready to go and get the season underway. We worked things out with Exclusive Autosport, but then COVID hit. And as you know, that series, Indy Lights decided to go on a hiatus. And I guess for the team, it just did not make sense to, it's quite a big jump, Indy Lights, for both the driver and the team. And I think, you know, I think it was just not the right time. I mean, I don't know what to say, really. But I'm happy. Honestly, I'm happy with how it went, played out.
Yeah, and I was going to say, when did the call from HMD or GMG come through to come out and test over at WeatherTech Raceway, Laguna Seca?
You know, it's basically, it's more like once I found out that I was not being a part of exclusive Autosport Indy Lights, well, actually not me, just the whole program was done. I just went out and reached out to every single team that had a seat available. And we were able to, you know, for me, I really liked the... Mike Marini was a great help in terms of organizing the test. And we were, we talked about doing a year and I was like, let's think about short term. Let's just at least do a test and take it from there. And then now we're here. So the test went really well and I was super happy with the team and the team is incredibly professional. It's going to be a good year. It's definitely going to be a good year.
I was going to say, you're with, as I said on Twitter, you're with a stacked lineup with Benjamin Pedersen, Linus Lundqvist, and David Malukas. Really, so far, it's a stacked field, you know, with Andretti Autosport, Juncos, Carlin, and, you know, J. Howard's team. And we could see more cars, even if it's part-time. So I think that this year is going to be a hell of a year for Indy Lights and, man, I just look at your guys' lineup over there at HMD Motorsport with GRG, and it's just astounding the talent that's going to be under that paddock.
Absolutely. And you know what? I could not – and that's another thing. You know, coming into the last year of exclusive, I was – not only I was making a jump to Indy Lights with a brand-new team, but we were starting the year as a solo car. So I was going to have no teammate. With a brand new team and now I'm set to have a team that's a bigger operation in Lights, and I have great teammates that are all incredibly fast, and we're all going to be able to learn from each other and push each other to go quicker. So that's only a huge benefit. And then as far as the field, I mean, honestly, I have a feeling that it's going to be more like 15 cars by the time it's going to be Barber. And if you look at the lineup, I mean, Lights, as for the past couple of seasons, it's been a 2 or 3 car race, really, for the championship. Even like the very first, I think the first year of the championship was its highest car count. But in terms of the depth of the field, I think it would be one off, if not the most competitive year for Lights. So, it's definitely going to be an exciting season to watch for the fans, that's for sure.
Well, one of the things that I like driving home is we're going to see 3 scholarship winners this year go head-to-head for a championship. We're going to see drivers who've been working their way through the road to Indy, yourself included, and it's just amazing the talent that's going to be in Indy Lights this year. And then you take a look down the line, and it's the same thing. You know, Indy Pro 2000's got a good depth field. You know, USF 2000. So this is only going to get better as the season goes on. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we see another team or two come up and run 15 cars. But I've got to say, I'm really excited for this. You know, what's the last question I have is, what's it like being one of the oldest drivers in the field? I think you're the only one that's in their 30s, because everybody else is in their, you know, like late teens, early 20s, you know, in their 20s. So it's got to be a little different because you didn't come up as early as some of the other drivers.
Yeah, no, honestly, the hardest, I wouldn't say it's hardest, it's just that, I think it's more outside the track and like your personal life, because, you know, your life does not wait for you. So I have more responsibilities. I have more things to take care of. I have some, you know, bills to pay and think about, like I work a 9-to-5 job, and it's like, you know, some of the kids are still in school or in college, or maybe they're homeschooled or they're just focused on racing. So I have more things to balance out in my private life, but that's okay.
I was going to say, because you're also a driving instructor, aren't you?
Yeah, I work as a driver instructor at the Porsche Experience Center in Los Angeles. I also do some private coaching on the West Coast F4, which is pretty fun. So yeah, it's you know, I made myself to be around cars at all times, pretty much.
I know that feeling all too well. All right, so how can fans follow your progress down the line this season?
Yeah, so for the fans, the best way to follow my progress is go ahead and follow me on Twitch. Nikita Goes Racing. I've been getting into streaming more, so I stream iRacing. I actually stream the E-Series. So we just had a race at Road America yesterday night, and I finished on the podium in that. Go ahead and it's any social handle, Twitch, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Nikita Goes Racing. So that's pretty simple.
Well, thanks for joining us, Nikita. I can't wait to see what happens this year. And yeah, let's definitely keep in touch down the line.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. I appreciate you sending this interview up.
Hey, anytime, man. Great to talk with you. And coming up next, we're going to have more on Inside Open Wheel. Stay tuned.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
We've watched driver signings from IndyCar, and then we've moved on to the USFIA series. Now we're starting to get some from FRP, and one of those was, I believe, the first one in F1600. Greg Rice announcing last week that Will Holtz will be joining the Race Rice Prep Championship winning team, and Will actually joins us right now in Inside Open Wheel. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule prepping for the season. So you've gone. It's interesting because you were running an F4 last year, and now you're almost going back to no downforce. It's really interesting. I think I've got to applaud you on that.
Yeah, we ran F4 last year and had a really good first year, full year in cars, and we were looking at our options for what we wanted to run this year. And it was we came in contact with Greg over the off season, and I knew one of his drivers from last year, Jackson Lee, personally, and I knew that he'd been really strong and that Rice Race Prep had been really strong in the F1600 championship. And we were considering running with them, so we went and we tested, and I really, really liked the team and the car, just how everything fitted. So we chose to run with them for this season and move from F4 to F1600.
And we'll talk more about your F4 season last year, because you mentioned it, a really good season, and watching the coverage, you were up near the front in the Gas Monkey Alliance Racing team. So what kind of experience was that for you, going, you know, running for a season in cars where, you know, you're used to running, you know, pre-finals, finals, practice. Now you're running 2-3 races in a single weekend.
Yeah, it was a great learning experience. I think F4 really was a good place to go, just to kind of learn how everything worked in the world of race cars, obviously, because we came from karting, and karting, you know, the driving and the racing similar, but when it comes to the actual environment, there's a huge difference. You go from, you know, you pull up with a trailer and you do everything yourself to a world where, you know, you show up and there are people there working on your car. You have a driver coach and an engineer, and F4 was just a great area for me to learn about how the world of professional motorsports works that I just hadn't learned about yet.
Not to mention standing starts, which is something that you don't normally see in karting. You do see it sometimes, but it seems like recently a lot more of the series are going towards rolling starts. What was that like, doing a standing start?
It was different at first, for sure, because I for, you know, my entire life racing, I'd been purely rolling starts, and I just learned how to do that. But the standing starts, it was a bit of a learning curve at the beginning, but before too long it felt pretty natural. Just finding the right RPM and getting the reaction time, and once you figured that out, it wasn't that big of a deal. But it was definitely fun to learn, and I think useful to learn, because it's not something everybody learned, and it's something that, you know, occasionally you're going to need to know how to do.
Well, not to mention, too, when you move up to IndyCar or, you know, Formula One or a series that uses hot pit stops, it's a useful tool because now you can get off out of the pit box a lot easier.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, let's talk about your karting career as well. Going through some of the articles in the local papers actually around here, it seems like that, you know, you really made a name for yourself going from karting to the Lucas Oil Racing School into F4.
Yeah. Karting, I raced karts for 6 years before I moved into cars. And that was a lot of learning because it was always just me and my dad. And we had a really small trailer and we'd just show up and we'd learn. At first we weren't good. Like he didn't know how to set the kart up. I didn't really know how to drive or how to race. But we learned together. And by the end we were up racing at the front and, pretty much anywhere we went, we'd be challenging for a win. And that transitioned nicely when I moved in 2019 to do, you know, a couple testing sessions with Lucas Oil School of Racing, and then eventually did a race event at Road America, which went extremely well, where I managed to win the first win two out of the three races, my first ever time in a race car.
And what helps is there are a number of kart races here in the Midwest, you know, whether you have your Kart Circuit Autobahn, there's Norway, Banter Kart Club, so plenty of places for you to go out and practice your skill throughout the years.
Yeah, definitely. And it wasn't 2019, it was 2018.
Okay.
Where every single weekend from basically May to September, we would be racing somewhere. And that's when we just saw the biggest improvement because there's no substitute for seat time. Seat time will always lead to some sort of improvement. And that's what we found. And we did, you know, every weekend we'd either be at a race or we would be practicing. And that's when I, you know, went from an okay kart driver, a good kart driver, to a really, really good, to a great kart driver that summer where we were just practicing all the time.
And a lot of those skills you can take into F1600 because you're not dealing with downforce. You know, it's you in the car, a little bit bigger go-kart, but you actually have a body around you.
Yeah, I think that definitely helped. Lucas Oil, because Lucas Oil, the look is similar to an F1600 car. It's slightly different in the handling and the mechanics, but overall it's similar. And that was a little bit of challenging at first, just learning kind of how to drive something that had actual suspension and, you know, front braking, and you'd actually have to learn. There were things I learned, but karting definitely, especially when it came to the racing, I thought I'd be super nervous when I got into the race. I felt like I would be panicking, but as soon as the green flag dropped, I realized it was just like any other race. It was, you know, you do the same thing you do in racing. Racing doesn't, like, the driving will change from car to car, but the racing, like racecraft, will always, you can carry that from anywhere. That was very useful.
Will Holt joins us on Inside Open Wheel. He's the newest competitor in F1600. He will race with Rice Race Prep. And I've got to say, you've looked at the schedule. It's going to be nice sleeping in your own bed one weekend this season, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm really, really excited for the race at Autobahn. I have track time there, and it's obviously close, so we can have some, obviously, hopefully, everything permitting with the way things are in the world right now, but we'll be able to have some local friends and family come out to watch and see how I do, and I hope I can put on a really good performance for everyone that weekend.
I've got to say, as someone who's actually worked a couple pro races at Autobahn, it's really nice sleeping in one's own bed for a professional race. It's I'm looking forward to it myself because I can just, you know, wake up, you know, an hour or two before and just drive the 15 minutes or so to the track. But a lot of the other tracks you have experience at, you mentioned Road America, which is the first time that FRP is going to be racing there. So it's a schedule that you're familiar with.
Yeah, definitely. I think there are three tracks on the schedule that I haven't been to. But by the time the season comes around, we hope to have been to most of them, either for testing or like some race events, non-FRP events beforehand. So I do have track time there. But the tracks like Mid-Ohio and Barber and Road America and Autobahn, tracks that I have been at and that I have racing experience at, I'm really looking forward to going there. And I think those will be some areas, especially Barber, which is a very difficult track we found to show up to and learn, because there's some really tricky technical bits. I'm looking forward to that, having a bit of track time where I didn't quite master it, but where I did learn the basics. So I can go there this year and really perfect some of the things I started to learn last year.
Well, of course, last year, if you, for those who were listening may remember, that was a red flag fest for the F4 race. That was the first race that race director Scott Goodyear instituted the time limit rule, which I still say is probably one of the best rules that was that came out of this past season. So I could imagine getting a rhythm with all the incidents at Barber Motorsports Park last year was a little bit hard there.
It was, and we didn't have any track time leading up to the event, and then qualifying got rained out, yep. So that was, an extra half hour of track time lost. But it was hard at first to get into a rhythm. I definitely made a lot of mistakes just because I didn't, I wasn't, my restarts weren't great, and then I just didn't quite handle restarting with cold tires properly. By the end of the weekend, we had a really good race at the end that ran green flag to checkered flag, and that's where I really got into a rhythm and managed to, I think, start to learn how the track flowed. And it was just unfortunate that that came for the last race of the weekend and not earlier.
It seemed like there was a lot of that, all throughout the F4 paddock, where a lot of guys had great races that final race of the weekend. I want to go back real quick before we let you go. You're talking about the non-FRP races that you will be running with Greg Rice's team, and that's one thing that I think that he does that's great, is he incorporates the SCCA Summit Road Racing Series within his program, because you do get that chance to test for lack of a better term, at tracks that you don't normally get a chance to go to, but in a racing situation.
Yeah, that's one of the things that was most, when we were talking to Greg about his plan for the year, that was what was, I think, most appealing, was it wasn't just for test sessions. You'd show up by yourself or with a couple other cars and drive laps for, a day to 3 days. It was, yes, you'll go and learn the track, but you're going to learn it and practice racecraft, which is something in the FRT F1600 field, which has historically just been shown to be super, super competitive. Racecraft is going to be very important this year. So I'm really excited that that's how Greg chooses to get his testing in, through the SCCA races and not just through testing.
I was going to say, are you excited to be part of finishes that are less than a second with, two, three other cars?
Yeah, I got some practice at Lucas Oil in Road America. The two races I won were, I think, one was by 1/100th of a second with cars three wide at the line, and the other was by, I think, a couple tenths of a second or a couple hundredths of a second between me and another car at the line. So I do have some practice with that, and I think it'll be there will definitely be some races where I'm banging my head because I wish, finish line was a couple feet further back or a couple feet further forward, but I think it'll lead to some amazing races and an amazing finish at a lot of these races.
Well, I've got to say this, it was great watching last season. I'm excited to see what you can do this season and even more front running equipment. How can fans follow your progress throughout the year?
So follow me on Instagram. That's where I post most of my updates at WillHoltz43. Same thing for my Twitter, where I'll be posting updates, live updates over what's going on. And if you want to see weekend updates, you can subscribe to my YouTube channel at Will Holtz Racing. If you want to see onboard and live and weekend updates and vlogs of the weekend, that's where the best place to watch. And I especially have to thank, we're bringing on a new partner this year, Level Up Racing School, where I first, the first time I ever got into a car. And we're super excited to be working with them, and I will be coaching there a little bit. So if you would like to get some personal coaching, definitely come to Level Up Racing School at Road America.
Tell you what, that's a great program that they've built there. I first heard, you know, the instructors that they brought there and, you know, when they first started. And that is just, I think that is one of the most foremost public racing schools that anyone can go to. I haven't been there yet. I'm hoping to someday, but I definitely recommend Level Up as well. Will, thanks for joining us, and we'll chat with you down the road.
Perfect. Thank you for having me on.
Coming up next, we talk to Adam Crane, the most recent winner of the Coca-Cola Kokomo Indy Elite Series race at Barber Motorsports Park, and we also preview the fast, quote-unquote, bull ring at Texas.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, normally we have our driver analyst, Charlie Ante, with us, but he decided that stock cars were more important than open wheel cars. I'll have a discussion with him. I'll take him out back behind the woodshed and talk to him about that later. If that comment gets me in trouble, I'm sorry. You can direct all complaints to Charlie Ante at InsideOpenWheel.com. Coming up now is our Coca-Cola of Kokomo Indy Elite Series wrap-up and preview. We're doing 2-1 today because why the hell not? Adam Crane joins us. He is the latest winner at Barber Motorsports Park. And Adam, I know you didn't see what was going on behind you because you were up near the front early on and throughout the race, but man, there was a lot of carnage there in the early part of the race.
Yeah, it was a little hectic from what I saw from watching the replay between quite a few of the competitors there. But yeah, as you said, I was happy to be up front and be out of all that shenanigans.
And I was telling Charlie afterwards, I'm like, you know, I've watched plenty of races. And the one race that I remember, even, you know, this is my first full season watching sim racing, so cut me some slack, everybody. I've seen races that are demolition fests in sports cars in the former Grand Am Continental Tire Sports Car Challenge, but that took the cake. And like Charlie says, because you don't have any repercussions, but at the same time, you know, you'd think that some of these guys would actually, save their equipment.
Yeah. Barber is one of the tougher tracks that we go to as far as road courses go though. So, because the way the track is designed, sometimes it's harder to gauge speed and distance against other cars. Mm-hmm. So I can understand why in some cases there'd be a higher likelihood for incidents or accidents, but definitely there were some of them that if the drivers had exercised a little bit more care and caution, then an incident could have been avoided for sure. But that goes for motorsport everywhere.
Exactly. But regardless, I think it was a great race, you know, after we got the mess out of the way. A couple of contenders ended out early. And I've got to say this, in spite of that, we still had some great battles near the front and towards the back. What was it like running the two separate tires for the first time this season?
It was interesting. The amount of preparation that me and VRS Satellite Racing had to put into figuring out how best to use the tires was fun. Having both tires definitely adds a big complexion to the race strategy and driving the cars themselves. We found that the black tires were on average 7 to 8 tenths slower per lap than the reds were. So trying to figure out a way to both set the car up and manage the tires definitely adds a new complexion to racing in the series and the IndyCar generally on iRacing that I find really enjoyable. So for this particular past race at Barber, the one stop I felt offered the greatest opportunity for us to avoid having to deal with the multiple reds, multiple blacks problem, and it ended up working out in my favor for sure.
And I was going to say too, because it seems like, you know, a lot of drivers are kind of making comparisons between the previous update and this update. What do you see as a plus and a minus between the update that happened just before the season got underway?
You're talking about the update with the tires versus the which update previous to
the tire update, the car update, making everything, making the crashes more realistic, making the car handle more realistic.
Right. Well, for sure, the updated damage model adds a lot of texture and spice to collisions and accidents, which I think definitely should make people a little more careful about how they interact with other cars too, because it's never a good sound when you hear that loud bang when part of your car collides with another car barrier or something. But I think that this most recent update, where we did get the damage model and the tires, has added just a lot of color and character to this IndyCar that we didn't necessarily have before. So, I mean, it's a plus all around. Obviously, the negative of it is, I would say, is also a plus, which is it just adds another level of complexity. And we're going to have the same thing on iRacing when we get something like rain. Once we get a different weather impacting the sessions, then it's just going to complicate things, but it's going to add to the immersion and difficulty, which is part of why I like it.
Haven't they been talking about getting rain in iRacing since it started?
Rain has been something that the community has asked for a long time. And yes, so it's something that iRacing has said that they're working on. But I can appreciate how difficult it would be, and that there are 432 steps that come before rain, and really we're only on step 30 or 34.
And Graham Jones is on Inside Open. Let's talk about your race, your quote unquote weekend at Barber. Seemed to be pretty fast in practice and qualifying, and then the race, it just, see ya.
Our qualifying and practice pace seemed really good. We had a really great base set that we were able to work from for the road courses. Obviously, our oval program hasn't been where we wanted it to be for the first two rounds, but felt really confident coming into Barber. Was able to set the best time in qualifying by, I think, around a little over 4/10, which was pretty good. Obviously, would have liked it if Phil and Henry had been up towards the front, but I mean, I'll take what I can get. If my competitors want to end up sort of shooting themselves in the foot based on how previous rounds go, then I'm not going to say no to points. But still would have liked it if they were up front for the battle itself. I mean, once the race started, it was about managing the tires, managing my gaps, and hitting my fuel number, and I was happy that just how it ended up working out, where I didn't have too much pressure, didn't have to push too hard, and ended up making the number on both the first and second stints.
Yeah, and that helps too, especially at a place like Barber where it's flowy. You got to get in that rhythm early, or else your whole race is shot in that first stint. That's where you really got to focus on trying to get through to make sure that you can run the race through. I mean, you led 26 laps, so over half the race. Kingsbury and Ike, they battled early on, but you know, after that, you were able to get through and not only take the win, but you took the most bonus points, one for the pole position. You led one or more laps, so that's an extra point, and you took two for leading the most laps, so that's an extra 4 points in the arsenal. Going into Texas, that's got to be good, knowing you can at least make up the points on the road courses. But yeah, you talk about that oval program. It seems like some of the teams that are oval teams, they're fine. The road course teams, you know, vice versa. But then you take a look at the Chris Demerit, and I think that if he wouldn't have had that early race incident, he might have been up near the front.
Yeah, Chris and I5G typically have pretty good pace at road courses, so I would have probably expected them to be up around the top five, top eight sort of area by the end of the race. I didn't think he qualified that well. I think it was just outside the top 10 or just inside. But definitely with the schedule being predominantly ovals, need to make as much hay as I can and we can at Satellite for making up points on the road courses. Yes, our oval program hasn't been where we want it to be, but I mean, good news is we have, we had quite a bit of time before Texas, and we think we found a few things we might be able to use to help us gain some pace there.
And let's talk about Texas. Now, is that the new layout of Texas, or is it still the old layout, or if both are the same banking?
That is the new Texas okay. layout with the lower turn one, turn two banking. And also, as of I think two seasons ago, the updated fence lighting. So we have the strobe fence lighting.
Ooh, that's fancy.
Hopefully there aren't any yellows, but if there are, then we'll be able to have a little dance party.
Well, hopefully they also won't have the the PJ compound that really messes with the Indy cars whenever they're there. But let's talk a little bit about Texas. Yeah, obviously, as we said, it's a different racetrack than what, you know, we've seen over the past couple of years, because it's a little bit flatter, a little bit wider in one and two. That makes, I think, the racing a little bit better. It's not necessarily a pack racing, but you can get up in that second or third groove the later the race goes on.
Yeah, I'm not sure, and I don't think anyone really knows necessarily how the racing's going to be with this updated tire and what grooves might be available. I think, as sort of the IndyCar community has talked about in amongst itself a few different occasions, predominantly air, getting clean air on the nose, is going to be what really moves people out of each groove. Turn three and four is still going to be probably on the bottom, but turn one and two might end up getting like a 1.5 to 1.75 groove. That's what we sort of saw last season and the season before, before this new build and this new tire model. So I would expect it to be sort of the same. If by some stroke of luck this tire allows us to get a second and third groove, then hey, the racing should be amazing.
I forgot about that. It's the wild card. I was thinking over to the real deal. But nonetheless, you said you guys found some things. How much testing have you and the team done off, obviously, the Indy Elite Series to make yourself feel comfortable on the ovals?
I would say several hours would be a conservative number. But the thing that the thing with the IndyCar and iRacing generally is that there's a point where common sense and what is intuitively true about how a car should handle, you sort of get to a wall. And what you end up finding is that things that are counterintuitive are sometimes where teams are able to build sets around. So imagine building a house around a fireplace instead of a fireplace, and then putting building a house and then putting a fireplace in it. So you sort of have to think inside out sometimes. And that can change the way that you build setups entirely. The few things that we've found, I think, are more, well, they're more like we're building the fireplace first. So we're having to sort of build a set around these couple little things that we've found. Which takes more time, and you need to trial and error more things and adapt the setup a little bit better. But for Texas, we think that we might have found a few things, and hopefully those things carry over to other tracks as we move through the season.
I was going to say, yeah, because after the Triptacular Memories 225, we got the Pocono 400. We can kind of consider that a road course, except nothing turns right. You have your fair mix of ovals and road courses, but yeah, as you said, you just got to make sure that you have that right balance, because if you don't, there goes your championship. And I think that Texas is going to be that wild card this weekend. And really, you can say that about any race this year because of the new car.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone is really in a position where they can afford to throw away races or throw away margins in terms of drop weeks. So you definitely don't want to walk into a race meeting feeling unprepared or behind the eight ball, and you want to maximize everything that you can get right from jump. And unfortunately for us, it hasn't necessarily been the case, but we feel like we're trending upwards.
Well, and the good news is it's a long season compared to what you normally see in some of these leagues. So you've got some time to, you know, try new things at the next track. So you get down in Texas, you know, work on Pocono. You got at least a week to work on that, and so on and so forth.
Absolutely. It is quite a long season compared to other leagues. And we're learning more about the car and the tire every race that we won, every practice we run, and every official session that we run to during the regular iRacing season.
Now, do you also take your car into other open leagues and, you know, try different things, see what works during a race, or do you just worry about testing?
Not other open leagues, but okay. The regular official iRacing series, which runs for 12 weeks during each quarter season. So iRacing breaks the year down into quarters, and then those quarters have 12 weeks. we will regularly run the official series, either just testing or practice, but also races. So earlier this week, I ran a road course race at Watkins Glen, and was able to get some good, meaningful data from that. And also were able to do a little bit of scouting on our opponents and see if they've found anything and what their setups look like, because a lot of the changes are visual with the IndyCar.
That's fantastic. Adam, do you Twitch or anything during the races so people can see your in-car?
I don't, nor does my teammate Chad, but obviously watching the broadcast is always a big help to everyone at the Indy Elite Series, and for sure paying attention to awesome broadcasts like this as well.
February 21st, the Triptacular Memories 225 at the Texas Motor Speedway. Well, it'll be on Sim TV, and we'll also have the recap afterwards. Adam, thanks for joining us, and definitely we'll probably talk to you sometime down the road.
I look forward to it, and hopefully, yeah, we'll be talking later on in the season.
And with that, that'll do it for this week's edition of Inside Open Wheel. Coming up on next week's program, he's another one of the drivers who is committed to FRP, but this time in the Atlantic Championship. However, he won't be running in Atlantic. Rob Radman joins us to tell us what he's racing and what he's done throughout his young career. The Academy Winter Series begins this weekend at Homestead Miami Speedway, and we'll have a recap of all the activities. There'll be plenty of surprises all the way. So for Nikita Lastashkin, Will Holtz, and Adam Crane, I'm Jeremy Scott. We thank you for listening to Inside Open Wheel. Charlie Ante joins me next week. We'll see you next week. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for the latest news throughout the United States Open Wheel Ladder System. Inside Open Wheel is a production of Trackout Multimedia.